If you consume any science fiction, you've heard about nanotechnology. Well, it's not fiction these days, and it's not about little robots either. Science and industry can already make very, very small particles of materials useful for a wide variety of products, and forests and trees enter the picture when we talk about nanocellulose technology. The Forest Service is researching using parts of trees to produce nanocellulose, and there's interest in our neck of the woods, starting with the Siskiyou County supervisors, who are keeping in constant touch with the Forest Service about the possibilities. Two guests join us from the Forest Service. Alan Rudy is the Assistant Director of Wood Fiber and Composites Research, working out of the Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you.
Good to have you here today. And Dan Blessing is with us as well from our neck of the woods. He's a natural resource officer for both the Klamath National Forest and the Butte Valley National Grassland. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Good to have you here as well. So let's get into the nanocellulose part of things first. Alan, tell us what it is.
It is a very tiny piece of cellulose. The way the trees grow, they have a very elementary particle that is on the order of 10 nanometers in diameter, and we've discovered a number of ways to isolate them, either as relatively pure 10 nanometer diameter particles or as some slightly larger particles. One form is called the cellulose nanocrystal. It's 6 to 10 nanometers in diameter and 100 nanometers long. The other one that we produce here at the Forest Products Lab is the Tampo grade of cellulose nanofibrils. It's about 10 nanometers in diameter, and it's a micron long.
Okay, so when we're talking nanometers, are these millionths of meters?
10 to the minus ninth.
Okay.
70,000 times smaller than the human hair.
Okay, so very, very small. So, and where do things stand? I mean, is it still quite experimental? Is it getting close to reality?
I'm a scientist. I'm always optimistic.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's getting pretty close to reality. There's a very interesting interaction between cellulose crystals and cement, and it produces a stronger cement. So we have a project in mind where we're going to produce cement for a bridge, and that will go in Siskiyou County.
Okay, so an application we're talking about, a real world kind of thing. So not just for concrete and that sort of thing. What else can it be used for, Alan? What are some of the other potential applications?
There is a application that's coming out of Oregon State University. They use various types of these cellulose nanomaterials, and they coat fruit or other food, trying to improve primarily the shelf life of the food, but also other properties. This looks very, very good. We're in the process of trying to get GRAS, called generally regarded as safe status, for the cellulose nanomaterials so that they can be used for things like food coating. The biggest application we've been looking at over the years is as a high-strength fiber reinforcement for composite products. We've got a couple of projects going on where they're trying to put this into polylactic acid, decomposable polymer, and strengthen the polylactic acid so it can be used for products other than the clamshell type containers that you would get a salad in or other things that have to be refrigerated. It has some applications for liquid crystal type devices. It has there's dozens of them.
All kinds of things. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not surprised to hear you talk about Oregon State University in here because they do have the nanotechnology lab. Are those sorts of labs rather few and far between?
Excuse me, which lab?
Oregon State University's nanotechnology lab.
Well, there's nanotechnology labs in just about every university at this point. There's not very many that are dealing with cellulose nanocrystals or cellulose nanomaterials yet. Oregon is doing quite a bit of work. The University of Maine is doing quite a bit of work. Georgia Tech is doing quite a bit of work. And, you know, we've been working with a number of others.
Okay, we're talking about nanocellulose technology with Alan Rudy from the Forest Service. He works at the U.S. Forest Products, the USDA Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin. Dan Blessing is Natural Resource Officer for the Klamath National Forest and the Butte Valley National Grassland. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 and by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Dan, how did Siskiyou County and the Klamath National Forest end up in these discussions?
Well, the county supervisors had attended a meeting down in Sacramento, and they heard about this technology and thought that maybe it would be a good idea to participate in, maybe a...
Oops, Danny there. Oh, we have lost Dan. We'll have to come back to Dan.
You still have me.
Okay, good to have you here, Alan. So let's talk about how the cellulose is obtained. How do you get this stuff? I mean, we're talking about grinding trees into little tiny bits or something else.
There are three major methods. The cellulose nanocrystals, and that's an older technology. These things were discovered in 1949. They are attained by taking a wood pulp, typically, and treating it with 64% sulfuric acid. And under those conditions, everything, we call it hydrolyzes, but it basically dissolves away, and what's left is this crystalline particle. There have been minor changes in the way it's produced over the years, but it still uses sulfuric acid and produces these crystals. There is a one-ton-a-day plant in Canada that's making this. We have a small pilot plant that makes it in 25-kilogram batches. That produces the 100-nanometer-length particle. We have this other one we treat with a chemical that goes by the common name Tempo. It selectively oxidizes a piece of the cellulose molecule. That causes water to come in. It swells, and when we treat it mechanically, it breaks up into spaghetti-like strings. 10 nanometers in diameter, micron long.
Can you see individual particles? I mean, even if at 100 nanometers, is it still something you can't see with the naked eye without it being in a pile?
You cannot see either the tempo grade of fibril or the crystal with the naked eye. You need an electron microscope to see them.
Wow, that is very, very small, hence the nano. Dan Blessing's back with us. Dan, tell us again how the Siskiyou supervisors expressed interest in nanocellulose technology.
Well, they just went to a meeting and heard about it, and they asked to be part of this this test, and so we got the director of the Northern Lab to come out and talk to the community members here, the board members, the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors, and Forest Service people, and there was enough interest, to kind of spawn this study in Yreka.
All right. So there's certainly an appeal in potential jobs. Are there potential benefits in forest management as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't see this as something that's going to solve the fuels problem. By itself, we know that there's going to be many parts of the fuels problem. In this area, we currently treat about a tenth of what grows out on the forest, and so we know that this could be part of reducing fuels in our forest, protecting communities. That type of thing.
All right. When you talk about the fuels problem, you mean just the fact that there is that much fuel out there that can burn, and in fact, in the Klamath National Forest, lately it seems often does.
Yes, absolutely. And we're looking at ways to add value, these products could add value, help us remove more fuels from the forest.
All right. We're talking to Dan Blessing from the Klamath National Forest and Butte Valley National Grassland and Alan Rudy at the USDA Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin, about nanocellulose technology. You're welcome to join this discussion on the exchange with us, 800-838-3760, to ask about potential applications or what it means on the forest end of things. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. I'm not sure if this is, but it looks like an email. Grumpy John in Grants Pass wants to know, Alan, would hemp be a good initial source for these fibers?
We can use any source of cellulose. A distinctive piece of the project with Yreka is that we're actually trying to start from wood and bypass the pulp mill, bypass the method for purifying it to cellulose. I'm 99% certain we could get it from hemp. We would have to remove the lignin before. to be sure what we were doing, we'd have to remove the lignin before so that we had a relatively pure form of cellulose. We can get it from most forms of cellulose. We get it from an animal form. It's an animal called the tunicate or tunicin. We can get it from algae, but what we find with algae is some of them have crystals, some of them don't. You could still get a fibrillar form from the algae that does not have crystals.
All right, when you talk about bypassing the pulp mill, so right now are you getting the raw material to start with from sawdust or slash or some combination of stuff like that?
Well, the traditional method has been used to use a bleached pulp. The work we're doing relative to Yreka and the Klamath National Forest is starting with wood chips, and then some of the methods we're using need the wood chips to be ground up into a smaller form, more like sawdust. Some of them can actually take the wood chip and treat them, and they'll end up with a cellulose nano material as the product.
You mentioned that there have been some changes to the process, but it still uses sulfuric acid, so I imagine there are quite a few environmental, certainly some guidelines you have to work with here to make sure that things get done neatly, cleanly, and things don't get damaged.
The sulfuric acid is actually quite expensive. It has to be recovered, and of course everything then has to be neutralized. What's left is a small amount of sodium sulfate is the salt. I should emphasize that is just one method of making it. You asked about grinding, and that's another method. There's three or four different types of grinding devices that people can use to convert wood pulps, or we're hoping wood, into a nanoscale material.
Mm-hmm. That's probably a lot of grinding, though, with very specialized instruments, I'm thinking, because you get fairly large, coarse materials when you use saws and all the things we've gotten used to.
The initial grinding experiments were also done, I think it was in the 80s. They've been around for quite a while. People did not follow up because the energy was very, very high. What has people interested in doing this again is they've been able to reduce the energy required substantially.
Okay, so we're not putting in more than we're getting out of it, is usually what the equation ends up being.
No, we will get something more valuable out of it, and the amount of energy is down substantially.
So, Alan Rudy, are there different uses for the parts of different tree species? I mean, we're talking about the things that you have to do to treat hemp, for example. So I'm just curious to know if ponderosa pine would act differently from Douglas fir, from a hardwood, anything like that.
I have been telling people for about 5 years now that my quality control is in the trees. And that seems to be very, very true. We have not seen a significant variation in the size and performance of either the temporal grade of fibril or the cellulose nanocrystal, as long as we stick with trees.
Okay. So that brings us back to the Klamath National Forest. And Dan, what kinds of things have you worked on the forest end to talk about ways in which you might be able to get material to a nanocellulose facility?
Well, currently we do a lot of, piling of material out in the forest, either by hand or by machine. And so most of that wood is just burned in place. And so what we're looking for is, if we have a product that would pay for that wood to come out of the forest, then we can remove it instead of just burning it in place, provide that to this facility, and that would help us, do more fuel treatment in the forest.
So you could potentially pull slash out of the forest and use it for nanocellulose if things go well?
That's the idea. I mean, currently we do that to a limited extent with biomass for cogen plants, but, there's been a lot of biomass plants closing lately, so this would give another outlet for those types of materials.
I guess it almost goes without saying, but we'll say it anyway. You don't need big trees for this sort of process, then, do you?
Correct. In fact, it takes a lot of energy. As we were mentioning before, there to grind up a big tree. Small trees are the type of things that we're looking at. Removing those small trees, brush, that type of thing.
So do you have much interest and or participation thus far from the timber industry clustered around the Klamath National Forest?
Well, they've been providing the chips, so far that we've been using to study. So they're interested, they're obviously, if this thing was to look like it was a reasonable thing to do that somebody could make money. I imagine some of the timber companies would, look at, you know, the possibility of opening up a facility or something like that. But, you know, right now they're participating, but they're waiting to see, you know, how this technology develops.
And so how often are the conversations going back and forth between the supervisors and the forest, or the supervisors and the laboratory in Wisconsin?
You know, we've had meetings about twice a year now for several years. So just keeping in touch and seeing how it develops and how this feasibility study, you know, plays out.
In terms of delivering chips, sawdust, whatever that helps the process, if you're talking about 25-kilogram batches, Alan Rudy, you probably don't need a whole truckload at one time or anything like that.
Well, not for our pilot plant, but what we are interested in for the Yreka area would be about 50 tons a day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that'd be big stuff. So what, Alan, ultimately has to happen before anybody can start investing in a factory? I mean, how much work still needs to be done in terms of quantity of work and potential time to do it?
There's a number of products that have developed in the last 5 years or so. They tend to be relatively small yet. We really need a product that is going to drag, or it's going to take enough material for someone to invest in a plant. That's really where we're working at this point, is trying to get these products going. For the Yreka area specifically, there we have this test of, can we actually do this with wood, bypassing the idea of going through a pulp mill, and then we're also doing product evaluations of the materials we would get when we work directly with wood.
Okay, a final question here then. How did the Forest Products Lab end up in Madison, Wisconsin, far from any national forest?
Well, first off, that's not entirely correct. There is a national forest in Wisconsin. There's just not as many of them as there are around Yreka. The University of Wisconsin offered the first building to the Forest Service back around 1906, and the Forest Service took it. We've been here ever since.
Okay, I didn't mean to imply that there were no national forests in Wisconsin. I know there are, just they're rather far north of Madison.
Yes, they are, rather far north of Madison.
All right. I guess we'll check in with you guys down the road and see how things are going with nanocellulose technology coming out of Forest Products. Alan Rudy is the Assistant Director of Wood Fiber and Composites Research at the USDA Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin. Dan Blessing is the Natural Resource Officer for the Klamath National Forest and the Butte Valley National Grassland. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Right.
Thank you for having us on your show.
Okay, a pleasure.